You're listening to Podcast on Fire. It's Asian cinema in a podcast with your hosts, the magnificent trio of Stu, Ken, and Mike.
Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire, episode 43. I'm your host as always, Stu. Join me tonight, with me, the one and only, my faithful sidekick, Ken.
As always.
And as for Mike Banner, well, he's basically going AWOL, Van Damme style.
Well, he did say he had a bit of a Van Damme revival, so maybe it's like, I'm going to reenact the movies in real life, or the movie titles in real life.
He done like a split kick right out a window.
So I wonder what he does in life when he gets to like Hot Target and Lionheart. What would that equal in terms of action in life? No, AWOL, pretty easy, just don't show up to a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. And what happens when he does Street Fighter?
Hey, I was feeling sorry for his girlfriend when it comes to Double Team. Oh, that was terrible. So, on tonight's show, we're basically going to discuss the supposed power of Hong Kong celebrities that they have over the media. But in the meantime, last movies watched. So, Ken?
Okay, Scared Stiff. The movie. I love Hong Kong cinema. Oh my god, Hong Kong cinema is like a box of chocolate. You most definitely don't know what you're gonna get. Okay, how do we start sort of reviewing this? You and I discussed it briefly. Had you seen it prior, or do you have it on your pile?
Yeah, I have seen it prior.
Okay, so actually, I'm gonna spoil this movie because I don't fucking care if you want to see this movie because it's worth going through it, even though you know of it after I've spoken about it. But there are sort of 98%. Of the audience probably not keen to watch it at all, so mm-hmm. I sort of saved you. So if you desperately don't want to hear about how Scared Stiff ends, because it's very important to talk about it all the way till the end, just do something else for, I don't know, 20 minutes or rather fast forward.
Yeah,
that's probably a better idea. So Scared Stiff, made in 1987, directed by Lau Garwing, brother of Lau Garlung. Mm-hmm. He's directed a few times. He directed Till Death Do We Scare, which is a pretty fun early 80s horror comedy with the notable inclusion of special makeup effects by the man, Tom Savini. Made special effects for Day of the Dead and Dawn of the Dead and a bunch of classic gore movies, and was in Planet Terror the other year, mm-hmm. in 2007. So he actually was imported to a Hong Kong movie. And he's done a Play Catch, which was a follow-up of sorts, so with the same cast. And then you get to Scared Stiff. And it's... if you like movies from the late 80s up until, like, let's say, mid-90s, there's a magic in these that has to do with... And I'm saying magic because I mean it. I truly like it. Some would say magic in quotation marks. But it's a magic because it's a movie that totally disregards audiences' need for rhyme, rhythm, reason, logic. It just does whatever the hell it wants and changes moods and style and at any given moment. It can be anything. It is possibly a... too many things, and it's a flawed film, but in the end it's worth it. So going through it starts with a very strange scene with Eric Tsang's character Halley as sort of an object of desire for women due to him trying to keep his virginity or being chased in general. And what I gathered is that his best friend Mew, played by Mew QY, mm-hmm. He doesn't mind stepping in when Halley won't perform, because he's sort of a womanizer, so he can, you know, if you don't want to, I can, you know, sloppy seconds anyway, I don't know. It seems that way anyway, this storyline, because I'm not particularly sure what is reality during the late early stages of the film. what I do know is reality is that Eric Tsang is acting in his high-pitched 80s ways, which is kind of difficult to take. That voice is when in comedic rhythm and mood and mode, and you know, it's tough to take Eric Tsang during this time. Moving on, they are most definitely best friends, though, after all, and Halle even dresses up as a house robot so Mew can impress his date. And it's a very elaborate thing that just happens. You know, you're watching the film, and all of a sudden, there's a date that the character Mew QY has, and why is Eric Tsang a house robot? And how does he have this, like, voice box voice... how does he use that? Because he's not, you know, he's not using a voice scrambler. He just apparently can emulate this voice while walking around in this robot outfit that looks like sort of a scary clown as well.
Yeah, sort of like a silver cat suit's just lying about the house.
Exactly, and he's walking in a very funky way. So, after this is all done, because it's a sort of a wacky time, slowly darkness creeps in as... the car the two are in gets overtaken by robbers and Mew is injured in the subsequent car crash. And what they notice in the hospital is that his brain waves are unusually strong, and possibly ESP is being heightened in Mew. So the doctors, played by Wu Fung, who has a pipe, which makes him a doctor. I saw a funny caption of his, like, one of his scenes. "Hello, I'm a doctor, and I've got the pipe to prove it."
Oh god.
Emily Hsu plays his assistant, Emily Hsu of A Better Tomorrow 1 and 2 fame. She played Leslie Cheung's girlfriend and wife. She was active during that time only, basically. And these two doctors, they take Mew on this experimental journey where he's forced to enter dreams of madmen in order to further the study of what makes madmen. So he enters the mad mind of the character played by Wu Ma, and encounters, like, the vampires inside this mind, and it takes a toll on him. He wants to get out, but he hangs on because he thinks he can score with Emily Hsu's character. And then Chow Yun-fat turns up as a knife-wielding killer who's also a cop. And the thing is, this murder identity secret is secret for about 5 minutes, but we figure it out about 5 minutes earlier, because it's very obviously a Chow Yun-fat, even though they try to hide it as good as they can. And it's sort of an insane, energetic turning point for the movie, because it hasn't really got any spark prior to this. You know, you watch it for the turns it does take, but it's not necessarily... You're not thinking, I want to go back to this film. But in the end, you want to go back to it again. Because these broad and contrasting elements, they never reach out of this dull pit that they're in. And unfortunately, again, Eric Tsang is in his annoying stage as a comic actor. It really took until the 90s before he came bearable, both as a comedic actor, but primarily a dramatic actor. He turned around with the Alan and Eric Hello and Goodbye movie, obviously.
Yeah.
When Chow Yun-fat enters in one of these movies, he probably made, I think it was 88, he made the most movies per year he's ever done, but it's this stage between 86 and 89 where he was in just about everything. And Scared Stiff could be argued to be one of those movies where, you know, I think it's Bay Logan that's talked about. Hong Kong Cinema Film said that there were units always shooting Chow Yun-fat's head, his hand, the back of his head, at the same time, because he was in so many movies. You know?
Yeah.
And this seemed like one, actually, one that he just did to work. But the thing is with Chow Yun-fat, he's talked about this being a work ethic that equals to, you know, you have to find work, you have to utilize the times you're allowed to work, because they may not come back, they may not ever come to you. So it was a sort of a tactic that he embraced and wanted to embrace, because and he's right too, because 5-10 years later it was not the same production rate, and so not a whole lot of chances to do movies, and I think like so Simon Yam has always embraced this way of working as well, which has produced, you know, many turds of his, but also in the midst many classics, which make him and Chiang Fat, you know, top actors of Hong Kong cinema. So yeah. I've never had anything against that, even though they've been part of shit films. But yeah, the movie turns slasher movie like in nature, and anyone getting in the way of Chiang Fat is bound to be horribly hurt, including lead actors. This is one of the movies that doesn't spare, you know, people that you expect to be spared. And the thing is, when the movie gets to this like dark point, and it doesn't mix in comedy that much, director Lau Gawei, he seems more comfortable doing this kind of excess, you know, over the top things, and he did quite well in that horror comedy I spoke of, Till Death Do We Scare, when employing like the scary tactics, and which means, in my head, that is excess, and that's again going. You come round to scared stiff. He seems more comfortable being a bit out there, clownish, and it definitely amuses in its exaggeration, and especially in the finale, which I'm sure you remember at least parts of, Stu.
God, yeah, they show half of it in the trailer.
Yeah, exactly. They basically show the, and again, I'm going to spoil it now, people. I really mean it. Eric Tsang gets horribly killed by Chiang Fat. Gets it shot several times. His hand is shot off in a bloody fashion. That, as Stu said, that is in the trailer. They try to hide it a bit, that it's one of the leads, but they don't do a really good job in this 4-minute highlight reel of the film. And it's a finale set in a car scrapyard, where Chiang Fat needs to kill off all the witnesses. And he has Philip Koh and Yun Wah, who was the action director on the film, Yun Wah, alongside him. And it's a great shot that I use for my upcoming review of Chiang Fat. You know, basically, he's not like snarling loudly, but that face that he does, it's like that. And it's so, my God, is this the best actor Hong Kong ever produced? Apparently it is. Because he's obviously not, this is not a role for Chiang Fat. At least not in this movie. Maybe in another movie where he could focus more, there was better filmmaking, maybe he could play a bad guy better. Because this is not like Full Contact, where they had like, it was all bad guys, but it was one, you know, there's at least one with a slightly warmer heart, and that is Chiang Fat's character. But obviously that movie is populated by just the sheer, you know, villains. But it fit that movie.
Yeah.
The best part of the finale is when they viciously killed off Eric Tsang. And I remember when seeing that shot where they shot off his hand. You know, I got that, like, I did that double take, basically, because I looked at the screen, like, twice, like, turned my head. What? Did they just do that? Rewound. Yeah, they did that. Okay, this movie's cool now. Because this sets off the ESP powers of the MuQY character. They pay off this. And he turns totally badass and starts flinging cars around with his mind, doing all over the scrapyard, killing off Philip Koh and Yun Wah really viciously. That's quite a gory film. And Chiang Fat gets like 10 cars thrown at him. Again, scenes that are in the trailer. And it's the more amusingly evil Chiang Fat becomes, and the more sort of out there the movie becomes, it also becomes very bearable to follow through on the film. It's a long trek, but it has that 3 or 4 quotable moments that seems rather enough. And I love this film in the end, because I know now that those moments will come. So yeah, go ahead, Stu, your assessment of the film.
That was basically the same for me. I can't remember what DVD it was, but it did have the trailer for Scared Stiff on it. Part of me wants to say Seventh Curse, where they used to come with half a dozen trailers on the DVD as well.
I have the Universe DVD, but I don't know if that was on there, but yeah.
But when seeing that, like seeing the cars like flying across, and I think there's a point where there's like a, is it not like a fan that's came out the car, and it's there's this cheesy shot of it flying towards the person.
Yeah, he's playing for like, Felico.
Yeah, and they're like backing away slowly, going, "Oh no." And then it just cuts to like shit falling from the sky, cars flying across the screen.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, just chillin' fat and like, I'm blanking on the trailer now, but I think to begin with, they didn't actually give you the impression chillin' fat was the bad guy.
No, he sort of seemed like he's victimized by
all the flying
boss.
Cars. Yeah, it's like, holy shit, a scrapyard attacking chillin' fat. It's like, and then it just showed you, it basically looked like it then cut to like this buddy comedy. where like Eric Sang's little robot servant gag tries to rape. Well, not rape. He just kind of goes into a thrusted motion to embarrass MewQI. And I think we're just going to have to put up this trailer with a show post.
Yeah, I can rip that trailer for
yeah, it is. Like if you're not interested in the film, you have to at least watch the trailer, because then you're seeing like most, if not all, the good bits.
That is what makes Hong Kong cinema different. Did at that time because they are not going to go down this route anymore.
Yeah,
it is overall wonderful, but it's not very funny.
Mm-hmm.
But now it was great to not know how this was going to end up. I only knew that this movie was considered bad, which is a good enough motivation for me to watch it, because I like bad cinema. When bad cinema is good, in a way.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, there's also like a 3-4 scene appearance by Anita Moy, who is the target of Chiang Fat, and she gets viciously killed by Chiang Fat, and that's her little cameo. It's just,
yeah.
It's just that kind of thing. That we've got this movie lined up, we're going to do this and this to you. Okay, yeah. And they moved on to the next film. It sort of seemed natural that this movie would come out during this time, 1987. No one would like stop and, whoa, 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 what is this? This is a break from the norm. Shit, no. This was the norm. Sammo produced it. Otherwise, it doesn't have good action or anything. I think it's the scrapyard finale, a slight car chase at the beginning. But there's no, there's no scraps for Yuwa to choreograph. But fuck, it doesn't matter. The ending reel is what matters, and he worked on that. Presumably, and therefore, Jun Hua deserves a lot of credit for creating memorable Hong Kong cinema.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. Wow.
Kind of glad that I have actually added that to my band list, because that is just going to be an easy watch.
Now it will be an easy watch, yeah. try and watch that with your girlfriend to see how many moods she can endure. Because this is a tester. I'm sure she's seen weird and insane Hong Kong cinema that goes from melodrama, comedy, bloody terror. But this will be a tester, because, oh, that's a cute robot. Yay! Oh, he got into a car accident. How sad. Why the fuck is he into the mad mind of this character? There's a Dracula vampire, and why is Chiang Fat evil, and why are these cars flying? What is this? I break up with you.
Why are they doing that to Eric? Why? Do they not drop him out of a building or something, where he falls through all the scaffolding, and or is that someone else?
I think that's earlier, but he doesn't die from that. But it's part of that like 5-10 minute reel where he's chase, but ultimately he's killed off in the scrapyard.
Yeah,
and it's dark. It's not playful love. It's really dark. And then it's like the ESP thing comes in. It's like, I've already forgotten about that part. So it's quite clever that they brought it back to finally pay it off. He actually had ESP powers and skills.
Yeah, but I think I've only got this ticket once with Margaret, where I'm going to just basically fool her with the line. It's like, don't worry, it's a good movie. It's got your favorite actor Chow Yun-fat in it. And I was going to save that one for Dragon Ball, but I think I might just cash it in the now.
I've listened to pulp, you know. I know what the stakes are.
I know the Hawaiian shirt.
I know that bit.
Right. So, for me, this week, last night, actually sat down and rewatched Born to be King, the final Young and Dangerous movie. if you exclude the prequel starring Nicolas Cage.
So, what were, if you're not excluding the prequel, what movie is this? The sixth or the seventh?
Six.
Out of six or?
Out of the seven, if you include the prequel.
Okay.
But this would be the last one, which would have the characters in present day.
Right, okay.
So, actually, when rewatching it last night, I realized how strangely political it is in a way, because they follow it in with a lot to do with like Taiwanese politics, where they're coming up. There must have been something big that actually happened. I've never actually like went on Wikipedia and searched on these dates to see if anything like this was true, because I do know on the occasion where they do base films around like presidents being elected, certain votes at the time, but this one's going about some like the what would probably be the equivalent of the president of Taiwan, the inauguration, and it's showing you the ceremony of that linked in with the ceremony of the triads electing a new leader. So a lot of it is like it must actually go a bit deeper than I thought it did, because when looking at it now, I completely ignored all of that in my review.
Really?
Well, yeah, I need to rewrite a lot of my reviews. I think my style's changed a lot.
But that begs the question, did you give it a good review or a bad review at that time?
I did give it a good review. 9.7 out of 10.
9.7.
I know. I went for the point system.
Very elaborately thought out, I assume.
So, the story of this movie is actually put down to two main storylines. This is one of the Young and Dangerous films where Jordan Chan is the leading character over Ikin Cheng. They do share the spotlight as the leading actors, but Jordan Chan has the stronger story for this movie, where his character Chicken is chosen from the San Lung Gang, the Taiwanese triads, to marry the daughter of the head Japanese gang, which is headed by Aizako Kurosaki. Fucking Japanese names. Played by Sonny Chiba.
Yeah.
So they're basically creating a bond between the two triad groups there, and obviously Jordan Chan's character was a big part of the Hong Kong triad group, the Hung Hing, or Hing Hung. I had a lot of trouble trying to remember that. Obviously, it didn't work. But, oh, fucking cold.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
to get out there.
My body couldn't actually handle it. I was breaking down there. But, basically, the San Lung Gang are quite pissed off because their leader, Mr. Loy, who is known from the past Young and Dangerous films, has passed away, and Jordan Chan's considered to be the lead of the Taiwanese triads. But this brings up a lot of hate because, first off, he's not Taiwanese born, he doesn't speak the dialect, he wasn't raised in their culture, and they all go to, they're all wanting to put maybe one of the elders in his place. Then he's mysteriously killed off. Everyone looks at Jordan Chan's character, and no one looks at the evil son of the late triad boss, played by Peter Ho.
Who sits in the corner, laughing menacingly and looking evil all the time, but no one is looking at him.
Well, he just kind of sits there, and he's the guy that is like, "Now let's be reasonable." He's trying to be like the calm person, but you know he's evil. Look at that haircut. Come on. So that's the main storyline for that, when Jordan Chan gets framed. And then you realise there's a crooked person in the Japanese Yamada gang, who's actually played by Roy Chung, returning for his third time as a new character. So, yep, there's cracks in this story, but then there is the story for Ikin Cheng's character, Chan Ho Nam, where basically it's the relationship between him and Shuke, who I have a real hard time with nowadays. There's something about that lassie. Basically, it shows you the decline of their relationships, because Ikin Cheng's character's like is still troubled by basically one of his girlfriends from the past movies. He's basically never gotten over this girl, and it just basically shows you the decline of the relationship between them, and the fact that Ikin Cheng actually meets the girl again, but in Taiwan. Well, when I actually say the girl again, it's actually the same actress but playing a different character. Gigi Lai returns for this movie playing a different character, although Ikin Cheng's obsessed with the character from the original movies.
Right.
I'm really trying to discuss in a way that sounds horrible to you, but I'm trying to make a spoiler-proof way here. Because obviously it telling you is the last movie out of six other movies and not trying to mention anything that happens in the first five. A little bit difficult.
And obviously you can't jump into this one expecting to have all the plot threads read out to you by the director before.
Yeah, because there was... I do remember at one time when I had the HKC UK forums up, and someone asked me, they were a UK fan, and they didn't want to watch the Ikin Cheng films to get the story. They just wondered if Born to Be King would be fine to watch on its own. I did agree then, but when rewatching it last night, there is a lot of flashbacks for the past movies, and basically the Ikin Cheng storyline would just be pointless unless you hadn't seen the original movies. Plus, when you do watch the original movies, then when you watch this one, it gives all the characters far much more depth.
Right.
So, yeah, I do remember rating this one as one of my most favourites out of the series, and I could still say it is definitely one of my favourites from the series. It's got like the great wide range of casts. It's got Sandra doing the roles she's had before.
Sister 13.
Yep, and we've had, is it Wang Yongming playing the role of Ben Horn, Chin Carlock reclaiming his role as Big Head, and Jerry Lam reappearing as his character Popan. But now I think it's strange because in all the movies his character name seems to strangely change, so I reckon if this is a subtitle translation problem, because I think he started off as Popan, and by the end of Born to Be King he was being called Mr. Peel.
Peel. Sure.
So
yeah, it kind of happens.
No one knows his real name. That's the point.
Jerry Lamb, that's the man with no name.
Yes. So yes, this is definitely one of my favourite movies. This was an easy rewatch from a banned list, which I could go into later on, but we'll see how the show goes.
The Love HK film called it surprisingly intelligent tri-drama that ends the series well, if not in an overly final manner. They also call it a bit overstuffed, but surprisingly intelligent tri-drama is not necessarily four words that people, you know, attached to Young and Dangerous, which is, you know, people not looking into the series at all, they just say it, you know, to be funny.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't associate it with surprisingly intelligent tri-drama by the sixth fucking movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's been assembly line for some time. But then again, by the time they begin doing the spin-offs and the prequel and stuff, they started to put in some more work, bringing in other directors to put in good work. I mean, Portland Street Blues is a great film. The spin-off of Sandra Oh's character, directed by Raymond Yip. Very good film, and apparently those were the days, the sort of Yoda Chan chicken spin-off film. It's also by Raymond Yip, supposed to be very good.
It is quite good. I have actually only seen it once, but of course I've put it on the ban list because it does deserve another show. And that is a film where it has scenes in that movie which are mentioned in later in the Young and Dangerous movies, when Sandra Oom's character gets married to another triad, and it gets to the point where they're joking about it in the sixth movie. So it's like they try and fill in all the gaps along the way, and they're creating the story but taking it in different directions.
Do you think seeing the movies how they're structured, do you think they wanted to have Jordan Chan in all the movies, but for whatever reason they couldn't, then this was the solution to make a spin-off movie, or it seemed natural to have him leave the series the way he did and do a spin-off movie? It was not a desperate act of them.
It did seem strange, because by that time I was basically watching them one after another. I wasn't as familiar with the spin-offs, but the spin-off was a good reason to fill in the gap of why he wasn't in that one. Well, the fifth one, that was the fifth one where he disappeared and Jane Carlock's character came into it. Jane Carlock's character was one that was supposedly in with the original ones, but then he was a scapegoat for, like, a hit. And basically he ended up getting, like, they expected 3 years, but he ended up getting, like, 5 years. So that was the reason why you hadn't seen him in all the other films. So they quickly knitted him into the story. But definitely, like, they didn't, like, just shy away from it. They didn't say, oh yeah, Chicken's away on holiday for a fortnight. They never said that at the start of the film when they're casually walking down the street.
Yeah, that would be the point where you're like, they didn't just do that. Oh my god.
Yeah.
But I do kind of dig the idea of expanding on the universe, the spin-offs. And yeah, not just prequel. I kind of dig that idea. Obviously, especially with the Once Upon a Time in Tri Society movies, where it's totally unrelated or almost, and just a chance to say fuck you and do a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you know, sort of not diss the series, but diss the notions of the Stoic Triad movie.
Exactly.
I'm hoping you get to Once Upon a Time in Tri Society soon, because it's
definitely
just a fucking funny film.
Mm-hmm.
And its heart is in the right place and its mind is sharp as hell.
It's definitely one I'm going to be I have to tune into it. How could I call myself, like, one of the top Young and Dangerous fans if I haven't, like, went through all of the spin-offs?
Exactly. I mean, Ugly Quan is again trying to get you to say good things about Once Upon a Time Tri Society in France, but I gotta ask, is Ugly Quan one of the more memorable, like, bad guy characters from the series, or it's because
for Francis Zoom's character, he is only in the first movie, but he always comes off as one of the more evil ones. Roy Chung does definitely come over as far more sinister, but that's because the guy is a bad guy in three of the damn movies. It's like, he's definitely sinister, but I can't remember which one of them was the most. So it's definitely, like, Francis Zoom. Everyone knows this guy because he went on to much greater things afterwards, but you could tell, you could definitely see, like, the greatness in his character then. Because when it comes to the sequels, we've got, like, bad guys such as Ching Mai Yao, Mark Cheng. Yeah, they all do have these great series of bad guys, and it's not always usually just the one bad guy. There's always a couple of them in there.
I was thinking about you mentioned the political aspect of this film. Is they didn't go down the route of Island of Greed, right? It wasn't about, or did I miss that in your plot description about a triad being elected in the political system, or they didn't go down that route in Born to be King?
It is kind of in a way, because there's a way that the storyline where Peter Ho's is trying to get elected into the triads, and he's going to form a trust with the government to annihilate all other triads. But you can, like, he's obviously being crooked about it. But it's like it's talked off, but never gets to that point. But whereas in Island of Greed, it obviously got to that point.
Yeah, which a good film aside from, you know, your quote sort of summed it up very well. You know, if all else fails, bring in a helicopter.
Exactly.
Which was a very bad step that movie made. Election 2 sort of did a similar thing, where I remember they were, though, talking about the influence of China on Hong Kong and what that would do to the triads, rather than they weren't elected into politics, but it had quite a strong and large sort of anchor about the influence of China. I can't describe it very well right now. It was a long time since I watched Election 2, but It can be made to work, and it can, and Triad Cinema can be intelligent, and I'm sure Born to be King is, if not totally satisfying to a lot of people, I'm sure it will surprise maybe viewers more than, let's say, Young and Dangerous 3 did.
Yeah.
to put it in sort of a perspective, in the middle of the series, assembly line on, you know, going, the wheels are turning.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's time for a break. Joining us for the later half of the show, we've brought in Jimmy.
Hello.
Right, so when it comes to the question segment for tonight's show, we've brought up a news article which came out recently, some recent Hong Kong news. Surely no.
Can I just interrupt you there, Stu? Because the podcast side doesn't really reflect properly who Jimmy is. Who is Jimmy?
God damn it. Yes, if you aren't a member of our forum, you probably wouldn't know that. So get your ass onto podcastandfire.com/forum. Jimmy, a.k.a. James, a.k.a. James, a.k.a. Tons of Fun. Jim has been like a past host on Podcast on Fire, I think it was 16. Yep, hosted by him and Scott Napier.
Yeah.
And of course, James has been on several podcasts in the past, I think another two or three. Even when he's just done his random cameo appearances, like now.
Yeah.
So basically, Jim's came in tonight to help us answer tonight's question. So, the little backstory on the news article for this. Recently, I'll just read this right out, we've copied it off the news website. On the heels of the bullet letter and his father's declaration. Wait, am I reading the wrong thing here?
What is this?
I think I've basically copied and pasted a paragraph from mid sentence.
Yeah, it kind of looked like that when I got the PM.
Ah, damn.
I got the different though.
Hong Kong movie database news. Oh wait, no, I shouldn't say that. But yeah, Hong Kong and Taiwan. Well, yeah, I could get rid of it. No one will know. But then I'm not actually taking down any notes to edit this out, so it'll probably stay in.
Okay.
So, for Hong Kong and Taiwan news reports that Gillian Chung and Cecilia Chung met and have formed an alliance to vote Edison Chen off the island. According to the news reports, upset over Edison's failure to personally apologise to him, Gillian and Cecilia are using their entertainment connections to scotch Edison's return to showbiz. Inferno Affairs' Alan Mack recently cited as saying, looking from the market view, he would not consider using Edison Chen in the near future. So, what is your thought of Hong Kong celebs using their fame to blacklist others? Is this really turning into like a big old episode of Survivor?
I think it's pretty cool, because now we can see that they're as bitchy as our celebrities are. Because I don't even remember about a month ago, if you read this, Charlene was being bitchy about Gillian, saying that, oh, I warned her about Edison. I told her he was a bard. I told her he was no good, but then she's new. I love him. I love him.
It sounded just like a character out of South Park.
I've got loads of emails. I do that Google Alert thing about Charlene Troy. Kept getting all these stories about how she supposedly warned Gillian about Edison beforehand. Like she saw into his computer and saw that he already had a bunch of other women on his computer.
Of course, it's probably on his fucking desktop wallpaper.
Probably.
It's like, yeah, you could use my email. No, wait. I've just seen a picture of Cecilia I've never wanted to see again. I'll email it somewhere else.
Don't worry about it, I've seen those pictures.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's strange because, like, obviously in Hollywood there's scandals all the time, but when it comes from Hong Kong, it always seems a little strange. Because obviously their scandals are never big as the things that happen in Hollywood, but when something like this, where people's making an alliance to vote someone off the island, why does this sound like a TV reality show? Because are they going to do like a news coverage where they show Edison going on the boat?
Baltic. Where did that come from? Was that a secret desire? Get him off the island. Get him off the island. He's done his best work. Get him off.
But yeah, it just seems so weird, and the fact that is like, let's form an alliance and we'll blacklist him. What they're gonna do is like, if say Andrew Lau hires Edison Chen, is this gonna be like Gillian Chung and her pals saying, nah, we're not gonna work for Andrew now? Is this really gonna turn into like this like school ground squabbles?
I think it's pretty much like yes. And I wouldn't be surprised those other two women involved in the Edison scam get involved as well.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not quite as famous, so maybe not.
Mm-hmm. I think Stephanie Tang was amongst like the people wrapped around his pole.
Yeah, I think there was at least four women. I remember reading that. I remember there was Cecilia and Jimmy, but I can't remember the other two because I never heard of them before.
But yeah, it's just so weird after.
I think it's brilliant.
I know, but did this scandal know happen like almost
about a year ago?
Yeah,
I mean, it is about a year ago when you and Mike were talking about it.
Mm-hmm. I thought this shit would have burnt out by now. Because this sounds like shit that would have just happened. Like, now that we sillily allowed this twat to take pictures of our twats and then put them online, we're not going to talk to him. But no, it's taken like a year.
We're not going to talk to him.
Well, the pictures are a bit more than
that. Yeah, basically, that's what they're going to do. They're just, like, get off our island.
Well, those pictures are a bit more than naked pictures. You should know that. I've seen one picture where Julian's going down on Edison and vice versa.
Man, we're really claiming our explicit rating on our podcast today.
Well, we're not showing
really
pictures.
I'd consider going down explicit. This is more like Seinfeld terms.
Please, no more Seinfeld. Shirts out of sync.
Brilliant. Phew, it's family friendly again.
It's family friendly. You can't just say eating out or something. You have to say, like, he's going down south or whatever. Which, in some of the pictures, he was. And she was too, actually.
Mm-hmm. Wait, I've got the Office reference. Looks like not Edison Chen, not Aiken Cheng. Cecilia Chung's taking the slow train to Philly. So probably only me and Jeff will get that joke. But
that's
it was worth it. It was worth it.
I don't know. I enjoy a good laugh, but this is, it's getting silly. And I think forming an alliance, and this is the thing, I might not have all the facts straight, so please, interrupt me to say if I'm wrong or not, but okay, to break it down, he took pictures of them, and they saw, willing or not, he did take pictures of them. That's not necessarily a smart thing if you're a celebrity, because by sort of all per default, that thing will get out. I mean, people who shoot themselves having sex, that will, and they're celebrities, that will get out somehow. So, and he turned in the computer, and it was discovered there because it was pretty visible. And the person that did that did commit a crime, obviously. But the thing is, they're expecting an apology, yes, which is all well and good. But it's not like Edison is, at least I don't think so, saying like, I'm proud of that. That was my best moment. I'm so proud. I would do it again. So, I mean, the way they're talking about it is like, he has stepped it up a notch and started to, really act or boasting about it and stuff like that. So I'm thinking they're taking it into completely silly directions, which is very much reality show, so to say, reality show, although this is a very soap opera like. So, I mean, what kind of good would it do to sort of eliminate him from the entertainment industry? I mean, it's definitely very uniquely Hong Kong. I don't think that would never happen in Hollywood. They would embrace it. I'm thinking like Paris Hilton. That was a career highlight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Career defining moment, as Kevin Smith said. So, I mean, if they're taking it as seriously as the news item seems to think also, I'm not behind it at all. I think, let it go. They're probably, if he's an asshole, they are probably better persons than he is. They're going to get work in the industry. He's probably not going to, although his movie The Sniper is finally coming out. which I'm looking forward to because it looks good, and Edison has looked good in movies for the last few years. So mm-hmm. I think just let it go, and 1 year down the line, you shouldn't really make it into a contest and a game of survival, Survivor, mm-hmm. as you said. So I think they're off base, offside.
But I think that's the thing, like how you says, people's actually going to embrace this. This is going to be the thing. Like there is going to be that director who takes a chance, and the headlines is going to be like, Wong Jing, like hires Hong Kong bad boy Edison Chen. Like they'll market that against him,
starring as photographer boy.
Yeah.
That would be different though if filmmakers started to exploit this, which could pretty much happen because you still have low budget category 3 filmmakers out there who have often made movies out of real life scandals and real life crimes. So I'm quite surprised that there's not been a cheap DTV category 3 movie gone out on the Hong Kong market, but maybe it has and only a few people know of it. I don't know, but I just think this is one level too silly. Mm-hmm. A bit entertaining because Hong Kong cinema scene is so, I don't know, chaste, if you will.
Yeah.
Very clean. And we're past it. I'm certainly past it. I was never really into it as such. It happened. I moved on. I'm looking forward to Edison's next movie. So shoot me. Picking up the sniper, I guess that was a dumb pun, but anyway.
yourself, Ken.
And apparently, I'm looking at his filmography. He's apparently somewhere in Co-Web, the Hung Yan Yan film with that Jackie Chan,
the Wushu finalist. Person.
Yeah, exactly. So, but he's at the bottom of a 8-person cast list, so that may mean very little. Mm-hmm. That's a screen time. Whatever. For me.
Yeah. But
I have to say this, seeing as it is the scandal it is, I'm not surprised at all that it's still going in a way because, it's an explicit scandal, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It's not someone that has bad mouth. But I do find it hilarious. I think Edison went out on TV with not an apology, but sort of a speech about our world and what is wrong with our world,
mm-hmm.
and connecting it to this scandal, which I remember was sort of what? Mm-hmm. going all pretty on us.
Instead of saying, I shouldn't have been taking those pictures, he's just basically saying, please recycle! Ice caps are melting!
It should have just gone on for 10 seconds, said only this thing, good evening, I'm a retard, thank you. And then that would be the end of it. It's not like it would forgive him, but I'm a retard, I did it.
Then he would leave his laptop on the stage with some new wallpaper.
And in the background of that PSA, there would be a laptop in the background that he's accidentally left open, and there's new pictures mm-hmm. of people like, oh no, it's happening again.
He's at Lao Ching Wan.
So, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Bring on the sniper.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying.
I feel comforted now that we've finished that question.
But can I ask you this? Does it entertain you more than engage you to?
It really does entertain me more because a little bit at first you kind of felt sorry for Gillian Chung, and because it seemed to have affected her far much more than Cecilia.
Well, she had that thing where paparazzi were taking shots of her in a dressing room.
Yeah.
Which is a fucking shitty thing to do. And mm-hmm. and I can't blame her, but that was difficult enough for her. The tech. Mm-hmm. So that's understandable. It's sort of I got over this. Now this happens.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that he should apologize, obviously, That's the least he should do. They're absolutely correct to expect that. But mm-hmm. to take it into the realms of Survivor and voting up the Islander. Mm-hmm. But how about you, Jim? Are you just following it a little bit?
I do find it, but I love it though, because it's so original. You know, whereas Celebrity, don't assume that in the UK, celebrities just say, oh, she's so terrible, you know, she's a hack, she's common. And they're the same, and they bitch each other, you know, and they say, oh, by the way, I have a new film or album out. And that's it, they never hear it again. In Hong Kong, they actually take it politically, and like, I want this bastard off the island. Mm. Don't want this bastard on the same continent as me, I think. To me, it's just so original and so brilliant.
Alright, so since we've dealt with our questions, have you came up with a underrated movie for us this week, Ken?
I'm in a trashy sort of mood, hokey sort of mood. Starting with the discussion we had of the Scared Stiff.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, have you seen that movie, James?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, the Chinese Fat movie? Where he plays a bad guy?
No, I don't remember that one.
And not Eric Tsang as a robot, either?
No.
Ah, okay.
I think I remember that, not that.
Yeah, that one's weird. Alright, two movies, because they're sort of interconnected. Golden Queen's Commando and Pink Force Commando. Alright. Directed by Chu Yen-ping, sort of universally hated. I was not going to say hail, because most people hate him based on basically one movie, Island of Fire.
Ah, yes.
Which in its short form, 90-minute form, is a pretty bad, dumb, hokey movie that copies movies scene by scene. But the longer version of Island of Fire and a few other Yen Ping films are pretty good dramatically. And there's a good chunk cut out of Island of Fire, only available in Taiwan, that has some good drama in it. But earlier in the 80s... Chu Yen-ping was working in Taiwan cinema as really a movie fan madman, in a way. Because, again, Island of Fire has scenes from other movies copied beat by beat. And Golden Queen's Commando is this mixture of, spaghetti westerns and it's a Dirty Dozen adventure, it's a women in prison flick. James Bond actioner, and is actually also known as Amazon Commandos and Jackie Chan's Crime Force, because it has Jackie isn't in the film, but I think they had an interview with him before the film in one like a bootleg release in America. So Jackie Chan's Crime Force, but that is shameless violation. But Golden Queen's Commando is that anyway. So as I said, Chu Yen-ping goes the Dirty Dozen adventure, women in prison flick, spaghetti western, James Bond action on us, and it's a sort of a time warp of a movie, because it has characters dressed in 80s style, look like a pop star out of an 80s synth group, I don't know, and the movie takes place in the 40s, and you have Chinese prison guards in Nazi SS uniforms. You know, no movie logic at all. It's sort of a 500% disregard for movie logic. But it's what makes it fun. And Bridget Lin leads a team of women warriors. Sally Ye is also one of them. She's the explosive expert. But Bridget Lin has a wonderful woolly hat and eye patch as her character design. But since she's Bridget Lin, she wears this phenomenally well. And the Elsa Jung is plays this aforementioned sort of 80s hairstyle assassin hiding behind the Bible. So she uses her Bible in a slick way, in a way. Character design straight out of the 80s. Movie takes place in the 40s. And it is this schlocky trash cinema that... I'm just happy whenever I see it, because it is clearly made by a fan and not someone who wants to wants to rip off something bit by bit. It's sincere in a way. It's really hard to explain, but it's a lighthearted madness and lots of stolen music from Sergio Leone westerns, and it's just a great like mixture. You know, you put everything in a mixer and see what comes out of it. And Golden Queen's Commando and Pink Force Commando, as I'll talk about, they're perfect examples of mad Taiwan cinema and perfect examples of, you know, schlocky trashy cinema, and from someone who's clearly honoring the movies he loves in an incredible sincere way. That might not be a viewpoint of people that are against movies like Island of Fire, if you look at it as a movie and not just as a Jackie Chan movie, which people tend to do. But it's a pretty solid prison film, actually, and Sammo is really good in Island of Fire. So when moving on to Pink Force Commando, which is sort of a sequel but yet not, because some characters die in the first one, they just gathered up the same cast of women, including Bridget Lin and Sally Yee, and you have like a parallel world where everything is possible yet again, because there's a Wild West town with 80s style graffiti. It's attacked by the Ku Klux Klan, and Chinese guys in Nazi uniforms are there again. And while this band of kick-ass girls fight for trust amongst each other once more, and it's idiotic, you know, as I said in my review, welcome to Chewie and Pink's world of idiotic fun, done with care for absurd detail. So it's again, put everything in a blender and see what comes out, and it's such great fun. It's that is an art form. I think that if you pull that off, and with that sincerity, it's very important actually to have that in there. And you can make an illogical movie if you put forth a certain kind of fun. So it shows also that Bridget Lin wasn't necessarily after her break in... she hadn't done Police Story yet, but she had been a star for at least like 14 years in Taiwan, and she wasn't opposed to doing certain type of movies. And it's great to see her excel in this kind of movie. She takes it, you know, as seriously as it should be taken. Good fun. And also these two movies are actually distributed in English by the wonderful people at IFD, the cut and paste ninja people, but these are complete movies. They're just dubbed in English. And for fans of IFD, the opening logo that they usually put in front of their movies, which has strangely similar music from Star Wars, only not quite. And it's a shot of it. They zoom in on this woman in white, that has she has a torch of some sort in her hand. That shot is actually from Pink Force Commando. So it's not like a bad movie logo that they went out and shot. They used that after a while, I think. And it has it's the Imperial theme, one of the memorable Imperial theme cues from Star Wars that's used in that, but not quite. It's that so it's like 98% that, but then takes another direction. So these are movies I can watch all day long. And Chewie and Pink directed Flying Dagger, which is one of Stu's, I wouldn't say favorite movies, but I know you like that insane movie.
It was a right good laugh.
And if you think about the energy in that movie, there's something similar to the movies I talked about. So he still had it well into the 90s.
Yeah.
Making new wave, which are comedies.
Because that film felt almost so similar to Boys Are Easy, and that was another film that included Bridget Lin.
Yeah.
But she was more of the tomboy.
Yeah. It's a wonderful sight in Flying Dagger. Jackie Chung and Maggie Chung play a married couple, and he is Nine-Tailed Fox, but and he has a tail that he can extend, a very fussy tail So you see that in the film. So it's just not a name. You should take that literally. And Maggie Cheung is flying cat. And she she acts very feline in that movie.
Yeah.
And whang! It's just so, oh my god. By this time, she's done quite a number of good films. She's worked with, she had worked with Wong Kar Wai. She'd done Center Stage by the time she did Flying Dagger. So it's like one.
She owed someone a favor, basically.
Yeah, probably. Probably owed Wong Jing a favor because he wrote that film. So it's wonderful to see Maggie Cheung, you know, the starlet, you know, the great cinema star that she is, appear in that movie. Flying Cat.
Right. Oh, I could just. I think I'm gonna have to give that film an head of watch as well.
Oh, off to the bad list.
Mm-hmm. Well.
Don't try and fucking sneak it into the bad list.
Ah, no.
We're watching.
It all of a sudden goes from like 60 to 61. And it's not even in alphabetical order, it's just put on at the end in small caps.
I swear to you.
It was there all along. But yeah, I think that's us. Why am I saying that I've been your host for this evening? We haven't plugged yet. Oh. Jesus. Ken, you wanna go first?
Seeing as we have James on board here, I don't know the address, but I'm presuming on your Facebook profile you have posted a review or two.
I've done two so far.
A sort of a tester, and I won't go into it because James can, but I'm pointing you towards James' Facebook profile. And I guess he can leave a link in the podcast post on the forums, but I'll let James talk about what I'm referring to.
Mm-hmm. Go for it, man.
If he would like. Okay. So.
Well, put in short words, I am going to start up a review site specializing in mostly Asian films that do not involve kung fu. Many things that have pop stars and other pretty people. And the occasional film that I like. There are no titles as such there, but so far I think I may go with 99% Asian, which I believe was Lantern Jaw's idea.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not his idea, then I'm sorry for whoever did come up with the idea.
Well, I can say this. I liked when you said it's basically 99% Asian, and I said I like that title. But I wouldn't say I came up with it. Mm-hmm. I expressed a...
Oh, it's you then.
It's you! Sorry, you Paul. Did. No credit.
And I don't need a credit, so if Lantern Jaw said he liked it on the forums, then, you know, thumbs up to Lantern.
I think someone like that, anyway. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter, because I can always correct it afterwards when I actually start the site. I can say thanks to Lantern Jaw, or GM, or whoever it was that said that. But anyway, basically, yes, it will be 99% Asian, and the occasional film that isn't.
Yeah, the name is quite self-explanatory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it will mostly be using most of the old reviews from Stu's HKCUK site that have yet to go on the podcast and file website.
Stop hassling me.
Yeah, no, sorry about that, but try and get more than the A's and the B's on.
Well, I've actually only got the A's on and one B.
I'm surprised you didn't go for the Y.
I actually have. I've been working. I think I've worked on Zatoichi and Legend of Zoo Warriors. I've just not uploaded it because I'm a lazy bastard. As many of you know on the forum.
Well, you would think like the Young and Dangerous moves would go up instantly and be displayed, at all times.
I know. I need to really up. Get
in my
them
world,
because...
in my world, the alphabet starts with a Y.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, basically, as was mentioned earlier, you can check out my Facebook profile, which is basically my name. It's public, so you can look up whatever you like. And I have two reviews on there at the moment. Probably a third, should hope to get a third one of Love on the Rocks done tonight or tomorrow night, depending on what outing goes. And any feedback you have would be appreciated. Of course, you hate it, and you can fuck yourself.
Ah, there's the small print. All feedback appreciated.
No bad press.
Fuck you. You get deleted from my friends list.
Fuck you. You are not welcome.
So, you got any other plugs, Jim?
No,
Ken? Ken?
I'm done.
Alright. Still done research, so he has three. Okay, so I'm going to give our credit out to the theme music, which was done by Brian Kirby of ShelfLifeCloven.com, who is actually getting married in the next week. So congratulations, man.
Is it to a real woman? Or man, depending on his head?
As far as I know, it's a woman.
Good for
you, Brian. Congratulations.
Yes, congratulations, mate.
Congratulations.
And I hope this is a real person,
and
not some
internet
people I know.
Okay, James, calm down.
As long as they are not harming anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The real what was that film? Lost and a Real Life Girl. Wonder if it's.
Oh yeah. I never got around to seeing that one.
Not seen it, but I've seen the front cover. A bloke and a blob. That's all I need to see.
So, second plug, the Lam Ching Ying form has recently been relaunched by some of the great people over there. So, the address for that website is lamchingying.forummotion. That's forum, I'll just post it on the website, .net. And that's another great website where it's basically been contributed by this brief group of friends which have basically met all over the world via the internet and made this great Lam Ching Ying website, where actually two of the people who founded the website who actually came together and got married, both of them being Lam Ching Ying fans, went online, met each other, was like, what the fuck, Lam Ching Ying's bringing couples together.
Wow.
That's
making from beyond the grave.
I know, I'll have to post that, the link to this forum, because it's a great place and there's really great people on it, and they've posted links to these great rare YouTube videos, a lot of his television series work in his later days, to his I think it was an uncredited appearance in the Bloody Ring where he was in a kickboxing match where I think he was going against Genoa. There's lots of these great rare little nuggets of videos on their website, and
I think that's the site where the visitor can write some a personal note about your feelings about Lam Ching Ying, and they'll put it up there.
Exactly.
I think I did a few years ago because it opened a few years ago, the website. So
yeah, it's definitely a great site, and I encourage everyone to visit it. So the link for that website, I think it's definitely just lamchingying.com, and there'll more likely be a link to that forum from there as well. And they've just got this immense photo archive of screen caps of Lam Ching Ying and so many movies. I tried to make Hong Kong Cinema UK quite a great site for Lam Ching Ying fans, where I was trying to find give the most detailed biography. I couldn't find everything, but these people went to the lengths where they've got the NTS VHCs and done this, that, the next thing. They sent me film after film. It's we traded lots of films. They're just such great folk. So
fans that don't mind sharing, because it's all about the love of film, to be totally non-cynical at the end of the show. Makes me very happy to hear that.
Yeah.
Nothing gets my respect more and gets me going more than a passion and creativity.
Mm-hmm.
It's the two best things in the world as far as I'm concerned.
So definitely check that one out. And the last plug is actually for myself.
I am great.
I've written my first review in over a year. So for people just visiting the Podcast on Fire website, a lot of the reviews I have been posting have been written over the past 5 years when I did host Hong Kong Cinema UK. And you'll probably notice a very big difference in writing style. 1 second. Right, yes, I've actually went and written a good old review of Blood Brothers, the Bullet in the Head remake from 2007. So feel free to check out the review archive on our website. And for those people like Jim that's wanting more up there, I'm going to be uploading as much as I can in the next few weeks. Although I'm not going to promise. I'm not promising anything. Fuck you guys.
Difficult.
So I've been your host for this evening. I'm Stuart Sutherland.
Ken Blossom.
James Aylmore.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
But yeah, I think it's time for a break.
Cue Tiger on the Beat music.
I reckon why I put that in. I was just why not?
why not Maria Cordero screaming at the top of her lungs? She has a great voice.